Welcome to Between Two Ledgers. I'm James Rose, and today's guest is Rob Pillins. He's an absolute legend in the accounting space and helps accounting firm owners run better, more successful businesses. We get into a bunch of topics today, mostly around training within your firm. Some of the things we get into are why your best people fail when they get promoted, the non-obvious skills great managers actually need, and why delegation is broken and how to fix it. And with that, I bring you Rob Pillins. Rob, welcome to Between Two Ledgers.
James, thank you for having me.
It's quite a surprise seeing you recently at the Accounting Business Expo.
Yes, great to bump into you.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't happen enough. It's just the downside of everyone living in different areas and me not being able to travel as much because of kids.
It happens.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about learning and development in firms today. I think this is really helpful topic because this is something that I think about quite a lot for my own business, where it's been on my to-do list to create a learning and development program / budget for my team for ages, but it always gets put off. It sits there and there's always something else that I'm going to prioritize above it. And I guess you are going to convince me why that is a really silly idea today. However, it's probably even more important in the accounting landscape. In fact, it's a requirement for some people to do learning.
Well, indeed it is. And you putting it off and maybe not prioritizing it as much as other things is pretty common, frankly, in firms.
Why is that?
Look, firms are busy places. I think most firms do the technical training pretty well. Like, they do seem to naturally do the technical training, but there's other forms of training which are so important, and particularly as people get more senior inside firms, it's those non-technical skills that really make the difference. And I think people just forget that sometimes.
That's fair. Can you expand on that, like the non-technical stuff?
Yeah.
Senior roles.
Yeah. So, you know, as you get more senior inside a firm, you start to supervise other people, review their work, you have a lot more contact directly with clients, so you're starting to manage those relationships. And once you get to that manager level, you really are, in my view, the pivotal role in the firm. You tend to be managing a lot of the day-to-day delivery of the work. You often have even the most contact day-to-day with clients. You're communicating up, down and around. You're managing, you're supervising. There's a lot to do. And frankly, most people, particularly in smaller firms, never have any formal training on this stuff. I say they learn the bad habits of those that have gone before them. They see what James is doing and they go, oh, I'll do that.
Definitely don't follow James. This is almost, my brain's going to Peter Principle here, which is something I saw a lot in the engineering world, which is, I'm going to mess up the quote, but it's like people tend to get promoted to their area of highest incompetence or something. But the English version is that people who aren't people managers get promoted to people managers. Yep. It's very common in the world I come from in engineering, and I see it. It's natural in any technical field, right? Because someone often who is like a technical person might not necessarily be that good at managing people, but sometimes it makes sense to put them in like higher roles for whatever reason. Is that what you, like, is that the sort of main reason? Are you saying there's a lot? Is this common in accounting as well?
Yeah, look, I think it is a bit common. I often used to use the analogy of doctors running hospitals and teachers becoming principals. Mm. Often they're ill-equipped for those leadership roles. And inside accounting firms, of course, there's a natural progression, or we like to think there's a natural progression, and eventually people in some cases will rise to that partner, director, owner role. In larger firms, of course, it often then comes down to who the managing partner might be or the managing director, if that's such a role. And that can often be a very tricky one. And sometimes it just comes down to the person with the most fees, doesn't it, I think? And because they have the most power, so to speak.
Yeah, and often, I don't know how this plays out in accounting firms, maybe you can enlighten me, but if you've got someone who's able to generate the most fees and then putting them into a managerial role where they're not generating those fees, is that a good idea?
I don't think it's playing to people's strengths, which I'm a big fan of. I often say inside accounting firms, we often want to focus on fixing people's weaknesses. And we sometimes forget that everyone's good at something. And if you're the great rainmaker and work winner, then maybe it doesn't make sense to be putting you in one of those other roles. Your happy place is doing that, and you benefit yourself and the firm hugely in that role.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because a friend of mine is partner at a pretty large law firm, and I thought that was going to mean that he didn't do that much fee-based work anymore, but he does tons, if not more.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, I guess it's just different. I always assume that managerial means actually doing managerial stuff. Maybe it just means both in these scenarios.
I think it does mean both. Yeah, I think it does mean both, although what we'd like to see, of course, is more of that leadership and management type stuff as we get more senior and a bit less of that hands-on day-to-day. Because I don't know, James, what you see sometimes, but I reckon inside firms, like senior people, managers, directors, partners, that sort of level, I reckon many times 50% of what they're doing could be done by something, by someone less senior than themselves.
Yeah, that's that is a big insight right there, because that's a lot of money being spent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it makes no sense. And, of course, it's often what I describe as a delegation issue, and one of the things you need to be able to delegate to people is people who are trained to delegate to. So we come back to that training piece or that learning and development piece, whatever words you like to use.
Yeah, and there's two pieces there. It's the people underneath being able to handle the work, but then the person actually understanding delegation and how to that's a skill in itself, right? Like I feel like a lot of people are very bad.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that, specifically with these soft skills and things that go into the like leadership type training for the senior roles. Like, what do you recommend people do? They are going to promote someone to this role. Where do they get that training?
Yeah. So for the non-technical side, it's maybe not always immediately obvious. I was blessed. I grew up inside a firm called PW. And it had enough people inside it and enough resources that you built your own. Mm-hmm. And so every time I was promoted to a new level, there was new training to have. It was really top-notch, really world-class training, I have to say, back in Sydney when I went through that. It's actually how I learned to become a trainer, because I joined the learning and development department as a guest instructor and went through their program. I guess that's why, James, in a way, I ended up developing some of the training that I do, because I felt like there was this big need in the market. There was a gap. I consulted with a lot of my clients, my owners of firms, and they went, oh, no, absolutely. We get the need for this. We've just probably never found a good place to get it, because sometimes you can go to the general management training and things like Institute of Leaders and all that sort of stuff. They're good management training, but they're not focused on accounting firms. And it is different. There are similarities, but there are nuances inside firms. And you might know yourself that people coming into the accounting space, if they haven't been exposed to it before, sometimes go, oh, okay, taking me a while to get my head around how this actually works. Mm. I ended up building stuff from the ground up based on my own experience, and that is a lot of experience inside firms, but also the last 10 years of just working with firms, and actually quite proud of where I've ended up with it. And it's every single module or workshop that I offer has case studies and stories that are accounting firm specific.
Tell me about the kind of things that, like, what other skills other than sort of delegation there, like, maybe even like a broad synopsis of the kind of things someone in this role would need to learn.
Look, if we're talking supervisor, manager, up to director, I start by saying, look, the foundation for that is you've got to be organised, right? Like, you can't be a disorganised mess, which sadly I still see occasionally. They're the people where everything is urgent, right? There's no proper planning, there's no prioritization, there's no thinking ahead, all that sort of stuff. I always say to people, a fundamental skill that often we never get taught is just, how do I organize my life, particularly my working life, so that I am constantly ahead of the game and I'm doing things in an orderly fashion rather than always working in an urgent, rushed space. And once you've got that in order, you can't manage yourself and you can't manage other people, right? So first of all, get your house in order. Secondly, then, of course, the power of delegation, because as I said, I see so much under delegation inside firms, and building those skills in terms of delegation. There are so many benefits from delegation. It's a win for the person delegating. It's a win for the person receiving, and it's a win for the firm for a whole bunch of reasons. And let's have some structure around how we do that, so it's really clear what the expectations are, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So I think
what's an example of that? Actually, I'd like to just dig in on that.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes, even as simple as when something is due, James, I want to delegate this to, and I need it by the end of the week. Now, in my mind, I might have gone, great, if I give that to James at 5:30 p.m. on Friday, that will be okay. But in your mind, when you delegate it to me and you said end of the week, what you really meant was by lunchtime on Friday at the latest. Something as simple as that, where expectations can all of a sudden be very different, and that could be a problem. Or someone says, oh, look, I need this urgently, or I need it ASAP, or I need this done, but someone hasn't described, for example, and this would be a classic inside accounting firms, reminding a junior team member not to spend 2 hours chasing the $2. some of those sorts of, even the materiality conversation sometimes, particularly if a less experienced person, when we're delegating, we might need to remind them about that. So I actually built a little bit of a framework around this, and I get people to use that, and we actually role play people actually delegating to others. It's quite good fun and very powerful. But it's this making sure that expectations are clear with the delegation is
really good. That's a really good point. I think there's so much of life, like all business and whatever, is due to like expectations not being set properly. Like this is a topic that's pretty close to me, but with clients, right? Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, making sure clients, making sure clients know what to expect, that we're going to need some information from you before we can do anything. This is the expected timeline. Yeah. Just a lot of companies just do not communicate this stuff in a way that keep people happy.
Yeah. And funnily enough, one of the other topics I like to work with people on is the whole client service and the client experience piece, because that's another skill, right, for these senior people. And I push very hard that very point, James, that you make around one of the keys to this is, of course, managing client expectations. And you get to shape those expectations up front. You have an engagement letter. You have conversations with the client. And that's fundamentally important as well. It's actually one of the foundations for having a great client relationship.
Yeah, I think that's a whole other topic that I'm going to...
But it's one of the skills that we're talking about.
Oh, 100%. Like, I'm just joking there, because I'm like, I've got to not go down this rabbit hole myself, because this is what we're supposed to be talking about. But yeah, so what other... We covered a couple there for the managers. We got to delegation. Like, what else would be in that?
Just running meetings. As we get more senior, we're inevitably involved in a lot more meetings. Firms have meetings. Now, meetings get a bad rap. Sometimes people go, waste of time. And often that might be the case. That's because maybe we haven't thought about why we actually are having a meeting. What are we trying to achieve? So again, it's this expectation of getting clear about what are we trying to achieve from the meeting. And the chair of a meeting is such an important role, and being able to do that skillfully. Training people to build their skills in that area as you get more senior, I think, is another classic. Another one is just the whole communication piece. Now, communication is a huge word, right, James? But creating some self-awareness for people in senior roles that actually not everyone is necessarily going to be like you, and they may be driven by different priorities or different stresses and might prioritize different things. And we might need to communicate in a slightly different way with people to really connect with them. Just those sorts of things. Again, that's a really nuanced skill, you could say, but it's a skill you want your more senior people to have.
Yeah, I can see that being very hard to teach, because I think a lot of that for some people comes intuitively, right? Like I've definitely not done any communications training, but I know very quickly how I have to deal with each person on the team. And I don't think that necessarily, not like that is a personal trait that not everyone would have, and I'm definitely not perfect at it, and there are moments where I slip. but that would be very hard to teach.
It can be done. It can be done, but you're right, and some people are more naturally good at that sort of thing.
One thing that always sticks with me in communication, and I think it comes under this banner anyways, catch them doing something. I read that in I think it's 5 Minute Manager or something was the book, and them doing something right versus...
Oh, yeah, it's the 1 Minute Manager book by Spencer Johnson and Ken Blanchard.
There you go. Yeah, but I think about that all the time, because it's so easy to catch people doing something wrong and you realize that you've given this person nothing but negative feedback for a month because... And they aren't hearing the positives. I think about this in a lot of our business. My business partner, for example, he is constantly hearing all the bugs or like things that need to be changed, or this integration needs to be improved for these reasons. It's all negative.
Yeah.
So I've got to remind him to be like, And he's just getting hounded by this. And he's like, oh, no one likes our product. I'm like, oh, no. I'm having like really good conversations. This is the incredible positive stuff we've heard. And so in a way, I'm actually starting to try to feed that into the general, like the company chat, so people see the positive stuff just as much.
It's an important one for the accountants, James, because we're trained to find the mistakes, right? And the review process that senior people will go through with their junior review points and so on, at a very practical level, they're a form of feedback. So this is another skill. It's a subset of communication, but this whole thing around giving feedback to people is another skill in itself. And you're quite right. It's very easy to jump onto the negative bandwagon, although I like to describe these as constructive feedback rather than negative, right?
Of course.
We need to frame it in a different way.
Of course, but, until you're on the receiving end of that for a month straight or something.
Yeah, but this notion that we need to be catching people right from the one-minute manager is a really powerful thing, because we know that as humans, we respond very well to positive feedback.
Yeah, and it makes you feel very nice. And it's the same, like, I really appreciate our customers saying nice things about us, because a lot of people would not like that. It's the same. They're going to contact support because they've got a problem. They don't understand something, that whatever. So when you get the positive message, it rings so much harder.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend everyone just try to find positive things to tell people all the time. I got a video message. I got writing a LinkedIn post about this, but someone wrote me up, did a video for me recently about something I helped them with years ago that kind of changed the trajectory of their like career. And it was such a nice message to receive. And it just made me think, like, how many people have I got in my life where like they've had a huge impact and they have no idea. And I should tell them that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
And obviously a bigger version of the same thing.
Communication and feedback are, again, specific skills that our senior people in firms need to develop.
There's clearly a lot. Hey, that's what I'm taking from this. It's just if someone's an accountant and they're doing technical accounting work and then they're in this role, you've really got to think about how many extra things that they have to know. And you can't just throw them into this. Like, they need some kind of baseline or understanding of these things, or at least knowing what to think about in these scenarios.
No, that's right. And look, as you said, some people are more naturally perhaps inclined to some of these things than others. I know when I was a business services manager, James, I think we could safely say I was not technically a brilliant accountant, but I was good at this stuff, which is probably why I'm doing what I do today, because I found I was good at this stuff.
We probably jumped a little bit, and this is my fault, we jumped into the deep ends a bit faster. And then there's something we missed, and we alluded to it before when you mentioned about not chasing someone for $2.
Yeah.
There's a piece here which is like, just general, like how we do things or in this company and about the company itself, right?
Yes.
Because I know we spoke about this offline. There's like values, vision, mission. And a lot of people hate these terms, especially in technical fields like accounting and engineering.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there's a, if you're, let, I'd like to talk about that. I guess there's two things here. It's like how we do things around here and like principles and like operating principles.
Yeah.
And, but then also the vision, values, mission stuff. Because I saw a thing where it's like, if everyone in your company can't say what you do or who you serve or whatever, that's a problem. So I feel like that must be a big piece,
And you could argue, I think that sits at the very top, right? We know, there's a lot of research on this, that people like to know where this business is going that I'm working in and how what I do fits into to that. Because we employ smart people inside accounting firms, right? They're interested in the why. They're interested in where's this firm going and what are we trying to achieve and how does what I do fit into that? And you could argue we could describe this as a form of learning and development where, as leaders of the business, we should be constantly talking about this stuff and have a very clear direction. Look, yeah, you're right, James. Sometimes people don't like words like values, vision, mission, whatever it is. But I think they're a clear sense of direction and understanding what we believe in and how we behave is important. And the research suggests that if we get really clear on that, then performance follows. And so that's a discussion that on a regular basis. And it's often said that as a leader, if you get sick of talking about it, then you're only just starting to have done it enough.
Yeah, I'm definitely bad at this. I think sometimes I wonder if my AI setup knows more about our mission, vision and values than the team does. It's like, it is all there. It is in the documentation, but it's not necessarily communicated well enough, right?
Yeah.
How do you said this has got to be spoken about a lot. How does Are we doing like a welcome to the company every time we have a meeting and going over the visitor values? What does this look like in practice?
Different in different firms. Certainly, fundamentally, every time you have a new person join the firm, then you would go through an induction process where you would talk about this. I remember when I was the general manager at Pitch Partners, that was my job for each new starter, was to sit with them and talk through what it was we were about. But there are always plenty of opportunities to reference these things, whether it's in the monthly team meeting or the weekly team meeting or performance reviews, other feedback things, town hall meetings, those sorts of things where we can always be tying in references to these things. And I think some of the most powerful, James, frankly, is it's just you as the leader of the business just talking to people about it. It's not fancy emails or texts or stuff like that. It's actually just you chatting about it with people and them seeing the passion that you have.
I think it gets a bad rap because like a lot of mission statements or like vision documents are just trash and really hard
and no one wants
to read them. They're boring, but it doesn't have to be the case. A friend of mine has a system for this kind of stuff. He calls it operating principles. It's separate to this, but it is informed by it. And I really like it. They've only got six of these in the company.
Yeah.
And one of them, for example, they call it SF for special feeling. So they are a travel company and they specialize in, I think it's like over 50s women into very interesting places. It's not like your standard sort of travel, whatever. And they have this idea that they like this visceral sort of feeling when you get off a plane and you're in a new area and it's like different humidity and you, it's like you get hit with this wave and it just feels awesome, right? You're in this new place. And they want to try like their whole thing, SF. They all talk about it all the time, SF. And they want to bring that through their entire company. So whether it's someone, a new starter, they want to give them a special feeling. They want to, when they have a sales call with someone, they want to give that person a special feeling. And that becomes their sort of guiding principle, the filter through which they run lots of decisions. But why I really like it is because it's easy to communicate. And it's just, so they say it internally now. It's like, what are we going to do here? It's just like SF. And so it's a really easy way to distill what's in their mission and values. And they do this. They've got a few variations of this. Like some sizes, it's internal stuff.
And that then filters down to the more sort of nuts and bolts day to day of how we do things around here, which is
100%
mentioned a minute ago. And that's where, of course, you do start to get into some of the maybe the nitty gritty of the systems, the standardized, documented ways of working that people know that this is how we do a tax return or this is how we do this. And I was in a firm, I've been the CEO of two accounting firms, James, and one of the ones I was the CEO of, we used to run a lot of lunch and learn type stuff where we would talk about how we work. Because it's very easy to forget that maybe we invested a fair bit of time in finding out clever ways to do stuff and we like everyone to more or less follow that way. Obviously, we're not trying to stop people from thinking, but we are providing some guidance. And so the how we do things around here training, I think, is really valuable.
Yeah, so that's another thing I'd like to get into. I think that's probably the last sort of training topic we should talk about because I struggle with this a lot, right? We have for example, it's customer support. We have a manual and it's what do we do in certain circumstances? But the issue is this gets so big. Like there are don't chase someone for $2. Like you would hope that is common sense and that needs to be like, you can't have a line item in the training that says don't chase people for small amounts of money because it'll just get buried in among a million other things. Like how does this work in practice? Like you've got this like, category of training, how we do things, like somewhat of an operations manual. Like what's some advice here on like how to do that without it becoming so big? What's the level of specificity you need?
Yeah. And look, I think different firms land in a different place on this, James. And I think maybe in a way it's what's right for the culture in your firm, because I have seen some firms go quite detailed with this stuff and they go, you know what, that's been working really well for us. And of course, if you go a little bit more detailed, sometimes that supports more junior people being able to do stuff, which let's face it, in the accounting space right now is probably a good thing. We've got to make it a bit easier for people. But I don't think there's a one size fits it all. But I think in terms of almost the why, the what and the detailed how, and then what are the tools that we might be involving for that. When I say tools, of course, software applications like a content snare, but checklists, guidance material, templates, all that sort of stuff. How are they being brought in to all of this? That's kind of part of the almost the detailed how identifying those tools. But even just going back to the basic why is, I had one client, actually they did this really well. They were in a regional centre and so they did lots of I returns, right? Not everyone's cup of tea, but when you're in a regional centre, small town, you've got to do a lot of I returns generally. But what they did is they had a small team, but they actually sat back and they went, why do we do this? Why is this important for our clients? It's a bit ho-hum for us. But they actually documented how does it feel for the client when they come in to see us. It's a big deal, right? It's the once a year kind of thing. And so they were really connecting with why it is that we do this. It makes a difference. And that then started to guide what happened after that. It was a really interesting process they went through, which I guided them on this, but they were particularly good at implementing it.
That's awesome. And I love that they're like really putting themselves in the client's shoes there. I think a lot of people really don't do that enough. This is a total side note. My brain went to it when you were discussing that, but my wife went to like some kind of appointment once and it was just like a really crappy experience. And it just made me think like, why do we have this? Imagine like a massage place when you go and they give you like a little tea when you get there and it like looks nice and they got music going. And I'm like, wouldn't that be so easy to replicate in like any other situation where a client is coming to a place like it doesn't look clinical. It's nice. Like, why are we all doing that? Why do doctors do that? You could totally do that in an accounting firm. And I have seen accounting firms where they're like,
some do.
Like John Knight Business Depot comes to mind. It's not like a Bali retreat in wood. It looks like an accounting firm, but it's cool. And there's a kitchen that, and it's the experience is actually just so much nicer walking into their office.
Yeah.
I just love that this is a total side note, but I just love that if someone's thinking about what does it feel like for the client when they come in, this is the kind of stuff they start thinking about.
Yeah. You say it's a side note, James, but again, that's the sort of thing I talk about in the client service and the client experience workshops. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of the client and what are they thinking and feeling and how can we make this better for them? Mm. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out a few ways to make it better.
Mm. 100%. It's just so easy to get lost in like the day to day, and we're all so busy and there's so much to do, so it is hard to focus on these things. I guess that's why people like you exist with the training, is that no firm has got the time to go and implement this all themselves. So I guess the result here is go and talk to Rob.
Yeah, and always happy to talk to people about building the skills in their firm, James.
Yeah, perfect. Rob, is there anything you think we haven't covered that is really important to get across to firms?
Look, I probably would just say a balanced approach to looking at the learning and development. So yes, we're going to need to do the technical. Yes, we're going to need to do some non-technical. I think we're definitely going to need to do the how we do things around here, training and the making sure people are informed about things like the values, vision, mission. The one thing we haven't talked about is probably a topic for another day, James, but I think the fifth leg in the training element is definitely now the whole technology and AI space, where I think we have to give that its own category now in terms of developing people's skills.
Well, let's dig into it a little bit. I think if so we had values, just to reiterate to everyone, is we went in the wrong order. That was my fault because I wanted to dig into some. I like to dig into the interesting bits as you say them, but like the values, vision, mission, the technical training, which you said a lot of people often do well, how things are done around here, the non-technical training, which is number four. We started on that, and then technology. Yeah. So let's dig into technology, especially, I guess now it's with AI. We haven't been very good at this yet. Like I'm using it so much, but I haven't necessarily distilled how it's used down into the rest of the team.
Yeah. And this is a tough one, particularly in the AI space, because as you and I know, it's moved quickly. It's hard to keep up and you don't know what you don't know. And you need an expert to really help you quite often with this stuff. But even beyond that, I think you need the leaders in a business to give people the permission to play, don't you? Because one of the ways that we learn in many different ways. Formal settings is one way, but one of the ways we learn is just playing with stuff, isn't it?
100%.
We read stuff, we then play, and we go, oh, I could do that. Now let me just sit at home here and have a bit of a play with that. And I think getting people a little bit excited about the opportunities that some of the technology is bringing, and people getting excited enough that they want to go and have a play with some of this stuff. And then they come into the office and they go, I've just realized we could do this, right? How cool is that?
I spoke to someone who's their big unlock in getting their team to use Claude Code was getting them to go and build something personal.
Yeah.
Like, like even on work time, build something personal. Yeah. And then that becomes the like, oh.
Yeah.
The big moment for them where they get it. So it's interesting.
So just like any form of training, James, the leadership team has to carve out some time and say, this is legitimate use of our time inside our firm. Mm.
100%.
You know, and sometimes we're not good at that because, of course, we're very much head down, business as usual, get those tax returns and accounts and advisory meetings with our clients, which are all valuable, of course, but to some degree that is business as usual and we need a bit more than that.
Yeah, I think, and that needs a strategy in itself, I think, to force the time. For me, that's, I swear I almost mentioned this every podcast episode, but time blocking, that's always the answer to me. If it's, I need to make time for this particular thing, whatever it is, whether it's a training or a new products that we're launching, new service, whatever it is. Like, you have to have some time for it. Maybe it's Friday morning. Because Friday is a hot, for a lot of people, a bit of a wind down day. So it's like, that's the time I'm going to use. Like, it used to be a research and learning day for me. Doesn't mean I spent all of Friday doing research and learning, but a chunk of it in the morning, there was like a 2-3 hour period where that's what I spent doing.
You make it a ritual. That's what you do.
It's in your calendar, so no one can book a time. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Well. Yeah, it does. Yeah. No, that's a good. That's a good tip.
Awesome, Rob. Yeah, I think this has been a great conversation. There's some practical stuff for people in here, and hopefully, it was quite helpful. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, pleasure. Great to chat.
Where would you like people to go to learn more about what you offer?
Look, probably the website planetconsulting.com.au. is probably the easiest place to go. I'm on LinkedIn as well, like everyone, but planetconsulting.com.au website has a little summary of what I'm involved in.
Very good. Rob, again, thank you so much.
Pleasure, James. Good to chat.